This week is Vayigash, and in Vayigash we're going to be looking at a lot of stories. There's a lot of drama in the Parsha, and of course it begins with the with Yehuda coming to Yosef after last week's incredible cliffhanger where Yosef says to them, I'm taking Binyamin, the rest of you can go home. They're like, wait, what do you mean? We've already offered to be slaves. And Yosef says, no, that's okay, you guys can all go, I only want the one. So Yehuda comes along. Vayigashi, I love Yehuda. Yehuda approaches Yosef, and again, not knowing that it's Yosef, and he gives this very impassioned plea, where he explains the whole story and all the drama at home and everything that has transpired between their father and Yehuda and all the brothers, as well as between Yosef and the brothers, the different conversations, and we know the end of the story that Yosef feels. The feelings and the emotions that he needs to feel in order to finally reveal that he is, in fact, the brother that they have been talking about as being missing. But let's take a look, because the Or HaChaim focuses at the very beginning in trying to understand some of the things that Yehuda says in his opening statement. Vayigash elav Yehuda, so Yehuda comes closer to him, Vayomer, and he says, Bi Adoni. So now, Bi Adoni is an interesting phrase, because when we translate Bi Adoni, look at Arsko, for example, if you please my Lord. But what does the word Bi mean? Literally. In me. So that's something that a number of commentaries focus on, and saying that, what is Yehuda saying with Bi? Meaning, that it could be true that the word Bi means please, but there are other words which means please. For example, Yedaber Na. We've talked about the word no. The word no has different meanings. We've seen that in the past, that it could mean now, it could mean please, it could mean raw, in reference to food. Yidaber no avdecha davar be'oznei Adoni, right, that your servant should speak in something in the ears of my master, val yichar apecha be'avdecha, and your anger should not flare up against your servant, ki chamocha kefaro, because you are like Pharaoh. Now, ki also is an interesting word. Does it mean because? Does it mean since? Does it mean as? What does kamocha mean? You are. Is Yehuda making an accusation? Is he saying you're mean? Is he saying you're nice? Is he saying you're powerful? What's he saying? And this is where the commentaries are going to start to branch off in different directions in trying to address these particular questions. Okay, so let's start with the Or HaChaim on Pasuk Yichas. He starts off asking a number of questions about the pasuk, so we'll skip the first paragraph because I've kind of mentioned a few of them. But one thing which I did not mention is you'll notice that he says Adoni twice. Bi Adoni, Yidaber Na Avdecha Davar Be'oznei Adoni, and he says Avdecha and Avdecha. He also calls himself a servant twice, Okay, so that's the first point that I just wanted to mention in advance of looking at this. So the simple understanding of the pasuk is ki davar yaduahu ki minag hamlachim yeshvu lefneim gedolei hamalchus sarihem v'yotzehem. So the way it would be is that here's the king, and who is near him are the people who are closest to him, his advisors, the people who are in his inner court. And then if somebody wants to petition the king, so the person, you know, I guess every king is different. If you look at movies, it's hard to really imagine because who knows how accurate they are. But imagine that the king is here and there's like a guard protecting him, because who knows, somebody can charge. I don't know. I mean, anything could happen, right? Jack Ruby was able to get to Lee Harvey Oswald because nobody was really protecting Oswald. But really, they should have been protecting Oswald. Not that he's a king, not the comparison. But the point is that you need to have something. Who knows? Some guy can go nuts. So he says that's the way it was. Kings are in front, and in front of them you have another tier. But in the second line, in Bayish al Davar Mishpat, or Davar Me'is HaMelech, lo yama behefzeg bein HaMelech v'sarov. He's not the guy who's between the king and the officer. He doesn't stand. He doesn't get the merit. Right? Here's the king, and he stands here, and here are all the officers. It doesn't work that way. He stands outside the inner circle. And from there he speaks. And that is where Yehuda was speaking from until now. But afterwards, Vayigash Elav, Yehuda approached, Perish Nichnas Lefnim Mechitzaso, that he was able to go into the inner circle. And he was between the king and the officers. The officers are now behind Yehuda, so that they cannot hear the things which he is saying. Only the king can hear it. So there, the Maharam Al Shaker, he says Vayigash Elav Yehuda. It should say Vayigash Lo, that Yehuda came to him. Now Lo and Elav for all. I mean, I guess for, I'm not going to say for all, but for most intents and purposes, they both mean to him. But they're different words. Lo means to him, and Elav means to him, but they're not the same word. So what's the difference between them? The chila panei hamelech sheyisratzelo ledaber biyichud elav, that he wanted to speak to him, but in a kind of, I don't want to call it communion. I don't really know what the word communion means. It's a Christian word, but he wanted to have he wanted to be a face to face, heart to heart with nobody else. If I'm talking to Ellie right now, Ellie, thank you so much for printing this stuff. Shkoyach, right? Thank you. I'm talking to you, but it's everybody hears what I'm saying. That's low. A love is come on over here. I'm going to thank you personally, and nobody else is going to hear what I'm saying. So that's the difference. V'hu amro bi adoni darinav d'chad davar be'esnei adoni be'ein shamei azul asecha, that nobody else hears except for you. V'zel lo yitachen kim im lo bi'oznav, and there is no way that nobody else is going to hear it unless he's speaking directly into his ears. V'chila panav shelo yimaher liskayis al asher shoel kazev inu me'amus. Now here's the problem with all this, and this is something. Remember, we saw this in last week's parsha, that when the brothers are talking to each other, the Torah kind of takes an aside and tells us that the brothers did not know that Yosef understood everything that they were saying to each other, ki hamelitz ben osam, because there was an interpreter. What does that mean? Now Yehuda is coming along and he wants to talk to him face to face, ear to ear. What about the interpreter? I mean, so it's just, I mean, I'm asking this question because he's kind of skirting the issue, but it's something which we need to ask, and I don't know that we're going to get an answer. But what does that mean? I mean, Yehuda gives this whole speech, some guy translating, you know, is there a sign language person who's giving it all over to Yosef? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question. The Ha'ulam Ro, what he's trying to impress upon Yosef here is, I don't want you to get angry at me, because the fact of the matter is that it looks like what I'm trying to do is I make myself an equal to you by talking to you so closely. But I'm not trying to do that at all. I'm trying to get your ear because I think that there's something that you need to hear. And this whole business, like this grandiose, where I'm with all these people in between, I can't get through to you. And I need to talk to your heart. But with the whole pomp and ceremony, it just doesn't work that way. Yehuda's problem is, if that his logic and his argument and all the rational things that he's going to say to Yosef are going to get Yosef to concede, you know what, you're right, you can take your brother home. What does that mean? Yehuda wins. What happens if you defeat the king in an argument? Good luck to you, right? Dead. So what Yehuda's trying to say is, I think I have the upper hand in the argument here. Maybe we can do this in a private fashion so that you won't be embarrassed. Okay? Uleval yiton. He's saying, look, you're not Paro, but you're like Paro, in the sense that you're powerful. So I want to respect your position, and I don't want to degrade you in any way, but I also think that you need to hear me in a more intimate fashion. Okay, so the point is, Vayigash Elav Yehuda, is that he wants to have this intimate moment. It can't be that, because the whole time he's talking to him, but it needs to be a different kind of thing, and Yehuda is very well aware of where this entire thing can go. Now, when we continue with this, I skipped a couple paragraphs in the Arachayim, so if you're following in the Chumash, you'll see, or in a different text, so you'll skip to, I mean, I don't know, actually, I don't know how it's set up in the Chumash, but there is one Od Yirtzeh, and then Ubederek Drash, and then the next Od Yirtzeh. So I'm going to look at all those Od Yirtzehs in the text which I gave you. It's the very next thing, so you don't have to skip anywhere. One second, Pamela. And then we're going to continue with that. And after we finish this pasuk, we'll move on to something else. Yeah.
When he wants to take when he wants to talk to Pharaoh, and he wants to have an intimate discussion because he doesn't want to put Pharaoh in a position where he might be embarrassed. My question is, why would it be that kind of a position if he just asked to, didn't go against Pharaoh, but just wanted to explain how it would affect his
He's absolutely contradicting. If the king says, you guys go home, I'm just keeping this one. He's the thief. He's the one who stole the cup. That's the law. End of discussion.
There's no room of saying, but let me explain.
Well, that's the whole point. That's why Vayigash love. He's saying, I'm not going to explain to you from a distance why you're wrong, king. I want to come close to you. And if we can talk, okay, that's the point that the Aruch Haim is trying to impress upon. Okay. So now, the Aruch Haim gives a number of examples of how we can understand this a little differently. Od yirtze, ki lo nigash yudal deber ela lema she'elav, perush lema she'ev, you know, ki agzera lo me'es Hashem ba. So basically what he's saying is, vayigash elav, Yehuda, the Aruch Haim is actually he's referencing something which he said in last week's Parsha. We didn't have a class last week because I wasn't here. But the idea is that his view is that the decree that Yosef is giving upon them does not come from God, which I didn't have a chance to look over what the Aruch Haim said last week, but Yehuda believed that this is all you're doing. You, meaning you, Mr. Potentate, you're the guy who's making this happen. It's all in your hands. This is not something that God made this happen. You're just being a jerk. that's the way that he's looking at it. So that's the first idea. So that's why he's coming, a love. No tefillah here. This is all, you can just change your mind. You don't have to be this way. We've already told you. We've given you every emotional argument. Why you should let him go back to our father. That's the first one. Next paragraph. Od yirtze lomar. Ki l'tovaso shel Yosef v'nugash ki b'chol perot ha'ana osa sheyaseh ha'eved Yehuda yaseh yoter mi'binyamin v'hu amro v'yigash elov. Perish l'ton ta'ina shel tovas ha'melech. Basically, he's coming to Yosef saying, look, everything that I'm telling you, I've already offered you me. And at the end of this, he does it again. He says, take me instead in every single way. I'm going to be a better slave. So what's elecha? No, it's to you. What's to your benefit? Is your benefit to have Binyamin as a slave? Or is your benefit to have me, Yehuda, as a slave? And the answer is, Yehuda's coming to Yosef. He is coming, Elav, to Yosef, saying, I'm already showing you that the advantage for you is when I am in your inner circle. That's what Elav means. Another one. Od yirtze, b'yomro Elav, l'bal yomar omer, ech soser, Yehuda divrei atzmo, hinenu avadim gam anachnu, that basically, what is he doing? He is addressing specifically a love to Yosef, in other words, to everything that Yosef had said to him. And that's the whole point. His entire argument here is, you said, you said, you said, you said, this was all you. And we told you this, we responded, we did everything he asked us to do. And now you never said that you were going to take this guy. So if there's guilt here, you know, that whatever that is, but we're willing to pay for it, but not with this guy. So you need dafka him. You can take somebody else. But Yehuda is addressing specifically what Yosef had said. Okay? The last, I'm sorry, two more things. V'omro bi'adoni niskaven l'gimel dvarim. So he says, in saying bi'adoni, remember how I mentioned it before, that the word bi has different meanings. Or it could have different meanings. So the first one is ha'echad ha'alif is labal yomar elav Yosef lama yidaber hu levav mikulam. So he's trying to subvert Yosef's being able to say, why are you the only one talking? Okay, when there are others as well. And he says, be noge. If you skip to the third line, he says, be noge adavar. Right, I'm the one who took responsibility. So I am the meaning for the father, and that's why it's be adoni. This is an issue that you have with me. Leave Binyamin out of it. I am responsible for the boy. I got to bring him back. And so therefore, be Adoni. That's the first one. Skip to the end of the fourth line, v'habez. The second one is, sheniskaven leton tana and nishmas latzil Binyamin, hu be Adoni, ani ganavti agvia. He says, be Adoni could mean, look, did Binyamin steal it? No. We all know that, you know, it's any admission that this was stolen is a lie. We all know that. We all know that. Even Yosef knows that, because Yosef knows that nobody stole it. He knows that he planted the thing. But the accusation is being made that Binyamin's the thief. And Yehuda's saying, you know what? I stole it, because I'm a big, strong guy. I stole it. I hid it in the younger guy's cup, because if anybody's going to be suspected, it's going to be me. I've been the spokesperson. So it's me. So nobody's going to look. If they look in my bag, because that's going to be the first place they're going to look, of course you're not going to find it because that's why I put it in the other kid's bag, because he's the last person you'd suspect. And in fact, when you read the text in last week's Parsha, whose bag did they look in last? No. Binyamin Kila. The last one was Binyamin. And that's the point that he's saying. He says, I'm the one who stole it. So if you really, yeah, it was in his cup. He was framed, but I'm the one who took it. Okay, that's the second possibility. And the third possibility is, third to last line, Ki asherara elav yinusuna, zeshir advarim, bitoli kino tevas adoni, ki hu hamelech. Okay, and that's the point, that what he's saying is, I'm the one who is making you king. I keep calling you Adoni. Be Adoni. To me, you are master. To me. To the rest of us, whatever. But I'm calling you Adon. And I'm calling myself Evan. That's the relationship here. And so what he's trying to do is essentially convince Yosef that that is what's supposed to take place. O Yirmos HaKasuv. Last one. Be Adoni. Perish Be'em Tzausia Sagazeh. That is amazing. To me, he's saying that what Yehuda is doing, unbeknownst to Yehuda, he's bringing the whole thing full circle. Because who was the one who suggested that we sell Yosef in to be a slave? Yehuda. And Yehuda is now coming along and saying, who's the slave? Yehuda.
Wow.
Okay? That, to me, I just found that to be fascinating. Again, it's unbeknownst to Yehuda, but the Aruch Chaim is saying that and we see this a lot also in the Book of Bereishis, and not just in the Book of Bereishis, but in, it happened with the brothers. Remember when brothers see Yosef coming, and they say, oh, v'nireh ma'ayu chalom osav, we're going to see what happens? So we saw this last year in the Ksav HaKabbalah. He says, when they said that, you're right, as we say in French, damn straight you're going to see what's going to happen with Yosef's dreams. You're going to see exactly when you all bow down to him eventually. And that is Yehuda coming full circle in that sense over here. So that's what I wanted to share with you just from the first pasuk. And of course, he has a lot more on it, but to see how Yehuda presents himself and of course, his presentation is convincing to Yosef. Now, what's interesting, if you turn to page 252, if you look in the pasuk, you'll see that unlike in some cases when you have a parak break, a chapter break, where there's a space in the Torah, there is no space in the Torah. So I actually wrote about this year in the Dvar Torah that I write, that I believe that Yehuda was not actually finished talking. Okay? That the narrative is continuing. What happened was, because of something that Yehuda said, he triggered Yosef to just interrupt him. Okay, in other words, to say whatever he hears at the end of the chapter, Yehuda, that triggers Yosef to the point that Yosef is no longer able to withhold revealing himself, and Yosef reveals himself. So I really believe that he interrupted Yehuda, who would have kept on going if he hadn't achieved his goal. Yehuda didn't even achieve his goal, because Yehuda had no idea that he was talking to Yosef. So things did change in Yehuda's favor, of course, but not in a way that he had anticipated. Okay, so let's take a look now at the beginning of Perek Memhei, chapter 45. So we're on page 252, six lines down in the text, seven lines down in the text. The lo yachol Yosef lehisapek, six lines down, but now seven lines down. That Yosef, so it's actually interesting what lehisapek means, that he couldn't control himself, or he wasn't able to get the words out. Lechol anitzavim alav. With everybody standing around. And so what does he do? He says, everybody out. And there was no person there when Yosef revealed himself to his brothers. Again, that's it opens up a door to an interesting question. What does it mean, below Amad Ish? There are at least 11 Ishes there, but they're all considered Echav, his brothers. So that's one thing to consider. Are they no longer men? Are they just, are they all reverting to being the children that they once were? I don't know. Maybe Ish literally means that there was no other person beyond them. Okay, whatever it may be. But let's take a look at what he says regarding V'liyachol L'hisapek. Perush lo atzar koach lahamtin ad shiyatsu kol ha'anitzavim me'atzman. That his ability to wait didn't stop until everybody left on their own. V'karav kol gadol atziya kol ish, and he called out loud, everybody should leave, perush b'mehera. meaning that they should leave quickly. Lo shiyomru lahem, let's say, not that he should say, everybody, you should please leave. Ki kishe yatsa miyatsman, yatsa b'mitun, v'lo sabal orach zman otza. Right? If the people will go on their own pace, they, you know, they'll saunter out, they'll meander, whatever it may be. V'yamar, v'lo amad perish, lo nisake v'yishal b'heirif tekev yatsu yachad. So basically, Yosef said, everybody out. What did they do? They cleared out. Okay, so that's the first thing. So, lo yachol Yosef lisapek. But now, he's not, I don't know how much he's explaining what lisapek means, but he's basically saying that Yosef had, you know, he was able to wait until everybody left. So their being there was a hindrance to his being able to reveal himself. But he's not spelling out so clearly. Last year we saw in the Aksav HaKabbalah that lo yachol Yosef lisapek means that he couldn't get the words out because it was just too busy all around. And so, but the Aruch Chaim's focus is more on how quickly people left. B'svada Yosef perush b'shvil hisvada uso elachav. When he makes himself known to his brothers, perush hakaras davar kedei sheyakiru v'yatzdiku ki hu Yosef. That's the recognition of something, that they should see that it is just and correct that this is Yosef. Davar zet tzarach lazkiram v'mechiraso. And so he needs to mention to them the sale of him. V'lo ratza lezalzel be'echav. And he didn't want to embarrass them. She'achaziku osam v'davar nevala kazol dimkor achayhem. Right, that's the reason why he needed to get everybody out. Because if he just says, ani Yosef achichem, as we may soon see, or maybe I actually didn't give that to you. Yeah, they're going to look, wait a second, you can't be, it's not possible. But when he gives them details of it, then it can be. So therefore, he doesn't want them to be embarrassed. See, it's not that he didn't want people to hear, because the fact of the matter is, when Yosef cries out, as happens in the psukim, a couple of minutes, you know, two, three psukim later, Yosef cries out, everybody hears about it. And how quickly does it go from Yosef crying out to everybody talking about Bo Achei Yosef, that everybody hears about it, that the brothers of Yosef have arrived? It's pretty fast. But what do they not know?
The reason
is how Yosef got down to Mitzrayim, because Yosef, it's by the way, it's the same language. What does he say to them? Vayitain es kolo b'chi. Okay, look at the Pasuk Dalet. Vayomer Yosef elachav. Yosef says to his brothers, Gishuna elai vayigashu. Right? That's the same thing as Yehuda. We saw before, what does vayigashu love? Talk straight into the ear so that nobody else can hear. So Yosef says, come close. But Yomer, Ani Yosef Achichem, Asher Mechartem Osi L'Traima, I'm the brother that you sold to Egypt. But who can hear that? Only them. And that's why he continues telling them, because their first reaction is when he says, I'm your brother, they can't answer because they're just, how? Right? And then he says, you sold me, but don't worry, it's all good. It's all good. That's how it goes down. Okay? But everybody heard that his brothers are here, but they did not hear. Look at the last few words. El Tzad Boshes Achiv, who or Echav, who sha'asa mitam in his car, but because of preserving, in other words, to not embarrass his brothers, he kept that part secret. Now, in Pasuk Hey, remember I just said a minute ago when Yosef says to them, it's all good. Pasuk Hey, V'ata, Yosef says to them, Al te'atzivu. Right? What does Al te'atzivu mean? Don't be sad. Right? Art School translates it, don't be distressed. V'al yichar be'enichem, and don't be angry in your eyes, ki mechartem osi heina, that you sold me. I mean, why would they be angry? You know, we saw in last week's parasha that they had remorse. Remember, Reuven says, hey, didn't I tell you guys, Al te'atzivu yo, don't sin. So here, Yosef is saying, don't be angry. Okay, that you sold me, because God made it so that I can help you survive. So let's take a look at what the Aruch Chaim says there, because he asks about that. So when I'm Pasuk okay, where are we in the booklet? Sorry, I'm just using my notes.
Page two,
towards the bottom. Okay, he says, and now don't be upset. What do you mean? And now just say Al Te'atzvu. What do you mean the and now for? The and now implies that there was something that happened before which would cause them to be upset. So he's saying, don't be upset. And Bez, Lama Kafa Lomar, Al Te'atzvu V'Al Yichar. He says, don't be distressed, don't be angry. I mean, come on, it's almost the same idea. And they're not even the same thing. One is Aitzavon, right? Distress, yora al shivron halev, which is that is a demonstration of a broken heart. Right? Don't be distressed. Vecharonav yagid al agayva, and don't be angry means that because your ego is hurt. So od sarkal das lamadig lekomar teva sena. So he also asks why the word hena is here. I don't know if he really addresses that, but he does look at the other one. So let's take a look. Achein perish shel dvarim hu al zeh derech yodei ani ki atem netzavim al hamecher. He says that al tiatzavu, don't be distressed. You are distressed over the sale. Kamo shegilu da'atam be'omram aval hashem yimanachnu. It's like we saw in last week's parasha, as I mentioned before. Gam lefi ha'medrash amru sheyardu levdoso b'damim yikarim. And the Midrash also says that they came to try to find Yosef, to redeem him with a lot of money. Zamar lahem viata perish kevan shemivukasham matzui lahem boda zo tasiru itzavon. He says since it has become clear that you came down, that one of the reasons why you came down was to redeem your brother. Now, is he referring to Yosef or is he referring to Binyamin? I'm not sure, but probably Yosef. He says since that was your idea, then al tiatzvu, don't be upset about the sale. Guess what? You don't have to redeem anybody. It's all good. That was the first point. He says, I know how you feel, but it's fine. So there's nothing to be upset about. And they've been upset about it. So he's trying to say to them, guys, there's nothing to be upset about. And we're on the same page. I'm fine. I actually believe that this whole thing of me being sent down here came from God. So you guys were just shlichim. You were emissaries of God to do that. Don't be upset. Just on the fact that you sold me. He says the fact that you should not be angry because it was only because of what you did that everything that was supposed to happen happened. How could my dreams have come true had I stayed a shepherd in Canaan? Wasn't happening. I needed to get down here. This is the only way it could have happened. And so therefore, this is all good. Etc. That was fulfilled as well. When they said, oh, no, we'll see what happens. Yeah, you're going to see. And how are we going to see if we sell it? I love that line. Okay? How many times did somebody do something that they think is really smart? And in the end, it comes back to kick them. I mean, how many short stories, movies, radio shows in the 1940s and 50s, you have somebody who thinks that they're a genius, they're going to do something, and in the end, it comes back to kick them in the tuchus. He says, that's the way you guys feel, that this all happened. He says, no, don't be upset. Like, don't even get angry. It's all correct. This is what was supposed to happen. Because the only way our family could survive now is if I were in this position. Otherwise, we'd all be dead. There's no way. So this is all, it's all min hashamayim. It's all from heaven. And so Yosef is trying to nip in the bud, however they may be feeling, and hopefully he's successful. And look, in the end, they hug, they cry, they kiss, whatever it is that they do, there seems to be very clear reconciliation, and everybody, you know, in the end, does live together, and in some semblance of harmony. Okay, so that's the beginning. Now, after all that, I want to bring to your attention V'ata lo'atem. Why did I do that? No, that's in italics. Okay, so I'm going to skip that for now. For now means I'm going to skip it. We're not going to have time to do that. So we're not going to do it. Okay, let's take a look at the next one. Pasuk Tezayin. Okay? Pasuk Tezayin. Okay, V'akol nishma beis paro le'mor bo achei Yosef. So the word comes to the house of Paro saying that Yosef's brothers have come. And this was good in the eyes of Paro, and in the eyes of his servants. So let's see. I just wanted to make sure. Rashi doesn't say anything. Okay. All right. And I wrote here that I wanted to give this to you, but I put a big question mark because this is very odd to me. The Aruch Chaim says, "Why is it good in the eyes of Paro?" Perush ki kodem ha'isel lahem cherpa ki eved molech. So up until this point, they said, oh, this is ridiculous. This dude is in charge of everything. Fact of the matter is, he's a slave. He was Potiphar's slave. He's a nobody. And so there would be people who would be pretty angry and upset. But when the brothers came and they saw, no, he's from a prominent family in Canaan, they said, oh, he's not a slave. It's a mistake that we've had. So my question is, really? The guy's been ruling for 9 years but at this point in time. People are still angry? I guess if this if the current president has a second term, there would be people who would be pretty upset no matter what, right? So so I guess that's human nature, right? People who are never going to be happy with the
also the time of famine when things are bad.
Right, but still, I mean, in the good years, people weren't happy, or maybe everybody was having plenty, so they said, "Hey, it's not him, it's us, right? We're awesome." Could be, I don't know.
You've done something for us lately.
Right, exactly. So Yud Zayin, Vayomer Paral Yosef Amor Alchecha Zos Asu Tanus Birchem Luchur Bo Eretz Kanan. So Paral gives him instruction what to do. Perish Davar Zeh Inchem Tzrichem Lasos O Birshus Aval Agalos Einim Yecholim Lasos Ki In Birshus. So what Paral is saying is that you don't have to do anything without my permission. You can do whatever you want, but the Agalos, presumably wagons, you can't take them without permission. Vafil Birshus Mi Yosef Lo Toil. But even permission from Yosef is not going to work. You have to say, or Sheyamer, that you're doing it with Paro's permission. Basically, I don't know what the word Nimusa means.
Laws?
Is it? Could be. But that was just a statute of Egypt, that the only way that they can bring the Agalos is from Paro. But as anybody with beyond a regular brain has an additional half a brain can know that what Rashi says is that Yosef said it because they were studying Egla Rufa, whatever. I mean, the fact of the matter is that if there are wagons coming from Egypt from Paro, there's only one reason why the king of Egypt Paro is sending wagons to Jacob, because who sent them? Yosef, and that's all that he needs in order to be convinced that this is coming from somebody who wants him to be down in Egypt. Okay, so now Chavav. All right. Okay, so they Yosef tells his brothers. So now we're on page 256 in the text. So they go up to Yaakov, and they tell Yaakov, Od Yosef Chai, that Yosef is still alive. Chihu Moshe b'chol eretz Yisrael. So now, if you look at the pasuk's depiction of Yaakov's response, it says "Vayofag libo ki lo ha'amin lahem." In the end of pasuk Chavav, page 256, six lines from the top, the beginning of the line, "Vayofag libo ki lo ha'amin lahem." Article's translation: his heart rejected it, for he could not believe them. Okay. Now there are other ways to understand what "Vayofag libo" means. Okay, they rejected, or he, you know, I mean, there's a real concern for his heart. Because the shock could, right? So lo yamin lahem. So what do they do? Vayidaberu elav. It's called Rabbi Yosef. Vayidaber lahem. Vayaras hakolos. Vayishalach. So it's a lot of things which take place over here until Yaakov is finally convinced. So this reminds me of a joke. You'll forgive my. So we started with jokes, so I'll tell you one joke that I heard from an Irish comedian. He tells a story about this couple that goes on vacation, and they ask his brother to watch their cat. Okay. So he calls him up on the telephone the next day and he says, "How's the cat?" And he says, "The cat died." He says, "Ah, why'd you have to tell me the cat died? Why couldn't you break it to me slowly? Tell me something like a story, like a cat's on the roof. And then the next day I'll ask you what happened with the cat on the roof. Oh, we call the fire department. The fire department take the cat. The cat, it was a whole problem. And the cat ended up in the hospital. And the next day you'll tell me, oh, it was in the hospital and the cat had an operation. And the next day you'll tell me the cat died, but at least you'll break it to me slowly instead of just, you know, killing me with this terrible information." So the brother says, "All right, I'm sorry." And then the one who's on vacation says, "And by the way, how's mother?" So his brother says, "Well, she's up on a roof." So anyway, it's a joke. Anyway, that's what the Or Chaim, that's the direction the Or Chaim goes in Pasuk Chavav. Vayigidu lo lemor v'tam omro. So we're in the middle of page 3. V'tam omro lemor nischakmu levasro b'derech shleis taken Yaakov. They had to tell him in a way that Yaakov would not be in danger. Kidabar yaduahu, because it's known. Kibesura tova k'shtia al yagon umagam k'shtia muflas l'rov asimcha yisukan adam yachalosh v'yigav peta pitom. Says that a person can literally die from shock. So if you're going to, especially somebody who's been suffering, right? Imagine long lost brother. I think he's dead. He's alive, right? That very easily could happen. Human nature, it's factual. So they had to break it to him slowly. So what do they say to him first? Yosef's on a roof, right? So first they tell him we have news. We said, good news for you. Good news? What kind of news? Actually, it's amazing news. What kind of news? It's so incredible, we can't even tell you. So he's already getting, you know, exciting, and his heart is all right, excellent, okay? And then they were finally able to tell him that Yosef's alive. Because he was ready and waiting for the most incredible news that can possibly come. And he was probably sitting down too. He said, look, Dad, we're all here. Shimon, Binyamin, remember Shimon had been in prison all this time in Egypt. And now Binyamin, remember you were so concerned Binyamin wasn't going to make it back? Guess what? He's here. And when we say we're all here, guess what we mean? We're all here. Unbelievable, right? V'achar sheikhin dato. So in other words, it was all, like you said, Ellie, an acclamation, and until the point that they were able to actually give him the full information. So they were able to basically good blow after good blow. Now the rest of this I'm not going to do inside. I'm going to try to. I mean, I'm going to skip around to it. But here is is where the Or HaChaim does something that I've seen a number of the contemporary Tanakh scholars talk about, where he says, if you just look at the very next paragraph, he says, "Ra'isila says lebe inyan Yosef echlo chashat tzara viv kama shanim." He says, "I really want to address an important question. Yosef, he's a slave, he's in prison. Fine, his luck is out. Things not so good. We understand that he's incommunicado, right? He's not communicating. He becomes a king." Yosef, you have an opportunity. Why don't you send a letter to your dad? Tell him everything's good. It's unbelievable. I know. I'm sorry. I haven't been in touch. I haven't had a chance. But you know, but now things are pretty good. I got a good job. You know, good benefits. So why doesn't he write a letter? So Bekitzer Amaisa. I mean, again, I would encourage people to read it because it's one approach, and there are some like I mentioned, you can Google it and you can find articles by Rabbi Yaakov Meidan and Rabbi Yoel Ben-Yun who have spent a lot of time. Addressing this question and in lengthy articles they've written in Hebrew, which have been summarized into English. But anyway, so his approach is, and this is really spelled out in the longer paragraph here, that why did Yosef not say anything? Forget about his dreams. Forget about his dreams for a second. The opportunity was not right for his family to come down. Okay, it wasn't right. Yosef needed his dreams to be fulfilled. And maybe he knew because of the famine and the dreams of Paro that they would eventually be fulfilled. But he says, the Or HaChaim says, that why did Yosef not write to his father? To protect his brothers.
Wow.
To protect his brothers. That is incredible. Because of all people that Yosef should be mad at, right? Right? I mean, it could take time until Yosef realizes his potential or realizes the actualization of Pyro's dreams, absolutely. But until that point in time, right, Yosef is, you know, he's busy, he's got an important job, he's overseeing all the storage of the food for the 7 years of plenty, but Yosef hasn't arrived yet. I mean, he's arrived, but he hasn't arrived. Like, when does he become really special? When people come to Pyro and they say, give us food, and Pyro says, go to Yosef, okay? Sorry, I mean, he's the guy in charge. So that's when Yosef really becomes most important, even though in the inner circle of the government, people knew that Yosef's in charge of the storage of the food, but Yosef becomes a real important figure when people are coming to him for food. So he says that the idea is that Yosef, if Yosef had sent a letter, Yaakov's going to get this letter, he's like, Yosef's a king in Egypt, wait a second, I thought he was dead. Guys, no, come on, what happened? When they come down to Yaakov, when they come up to Yaakov, they tell him, Yosef's the king in Egypt. Yaakov is so overwhelmed with, oh my goodness, Yosef's alive, Yosef's alive, Yosef's alive, that he doesn't even ask any questions. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter anymore. Because there are wagons here, and we need to pack, and we need to leave. And there's nothing, there's no reason for us to have this conversation. Because we're all packing and going. And it's like, you know, here, Dad, Yosef's alive, we're going to pack. Hold on, I have a question. No, he doesn't have a question. He doesn't. All right, we're all packing, we're leaving. No problem. So that's the approach which he has. And again, if you can, I would encourage you to go through it because it's good. Is it the only answer? Rav Meidan and Rav Binun are probably, in my opinion, with all respect to the Or HaChaim, even more. They really dig even deeper in terms of Yosef's psychology and what he's thinking and how Yosef felt that maybe he was rejected by his father. That's the way he was thinking. But okay, I'm not going to get into that now. Okay, anyway, so Yaakov, the next segment of the parsha here tells us about Yaakov's family. Before that, we go right into the next chapter, Perek Mevav. So let's see. So Yaakov his first concern is we're going down to Egypt. So on the top of page 258, Yaakov has a dream in Beit El. Is that where it is? Right? Is it in Beit El? No, Beersheba. I'm sorry, in Beersheba, and there God appears to him on top of page 258 and says, "Anochi El Al Hayavicha, I'm the God of your fathers." Don't be afraid to go down to Egypt. I'm going to make you into a great nation there. I'm going to go down with you from Egypt, and I'm also going to bring you up. Now, many of the commentaries will point out that what's Yaakov afraid of? Yaakov's afraid that he is going to be buried in Egypt. So God says, or he's afraid that he's going to be going down to Egypt forever. Right, and that's meaning in his lifetime that he's never going to go out. Now, it is true that he's going to die in Egypt, and that's perhaps what's hinted in Yosef Yoshis Yadol Einecha. What does Yosef Yoshis Yadol Einecha? Literally, it probably means, you know, when somebody dies, like in the movies, what do? Right, they close the person's eyes. So that could be. There are many other interpretations, by the way, of what Yosef Yoshis Yadol Einecha means. What that means, but anyway, the point is that maybe that's a concern that Yaakov has. But the Or HaChaim goes in a slightly different direction. Well, actually, not really a different direction. He just focuses on two things that Yaakov is concerned about. Okay, so the first one we'll read through the first paragraph in Gimel, and then the beginning of the second paragraph. What's Yaakov afraid of in going down to Egypt? If Yaakov's afraid of the exile, if Yaakov's real fear and concern is over the fact that they're going to be going into exile, as has been promised to Avraham, which Yaakov is well aware of. So, you know, the idea that that God's going down with him, that doesn't get rid of that fear. If God's intent is basically intimating to Yaakov that there isn't going to be a galus, matzinu shelo chein haya. Well, that's not true. So God can't be saying that there isn't going to be gullus there. Od kosha amro ki l'goy gadol manasinas tanzel la'asir samara. Why? How is telling them you're going to be a great nation? How is that going to remove the fear? And od sarach l'das amro the goy gadol simul sham v'lama lo yisimei goy gadol makam acher. Why do they need to become a great nation there in Egypt? Why can't they become a great nation somewhere else? So fine, we'll go down for a little while until the famine is over, and then we'll get out of there. Okay, why does he say I'm gonna ligoy and doesn't say ki goy gadol? Okay, so I'm not gonna look at all of the answers. I just want to look at the first couple of lines and then leave the rest, the part which I think I put in italics. Is that right? Did I put in italics? Okay, leave that for those who want to read it. But we'll just look at the first couple lines. He says, look, the fact of the matter is that the gzera of being, the decree for being strangers in a strange land was on them. And he quotes the pasuk, of course, Avram did not leave this a secret. So in the Medrash Rabbah says, Arshel Kain, Kishara Yaakov Shever Mitzrayim, Yaakov was afraid of was that the gullus was going to start with him. Okay, that's what the Midrash Rabbah says. Gam yareya shemi kaber shem beretz tamei. He was also afraid that he was going to be buried there, and that's why God says to him, "Don't worry, I'm going to take you. I'm going to take you out." But the point is that Yaakov's fears, they're absolutely, you know, they're found. They're well founded, and Yaakov's concerns are legitimate. And that's why the responses which God gives him are not so much to allay the fear of Galus. Galus is going to take place. It is what it is. But they allay the fears of Yaakov's personal experience, the experience of his children, and the concern that his family is going to be lost to assimilation. Okay, and that's a major concern that Yaakov has. And that's why he's told, Ki l'goy gadol asimcha sham. Yeah, this is the galus. Nothing we can do about it. That there's a gezeira for whatever reasons, that's what it is. But you're going to become a great nation there, and you personally are going to be taken out of Egypt. Yosef will see to it. That's what Yosef, Yoshus Yadol Enech, and one way or another, that will be taken care of. So it doesn't get rid of all the concerns and fears that Yaakov has, but it does address the most immediate ones, which he has, and that is the point which the Or Chaim is taking out there. Okay? Okay. This is fun. And the next part is not fascinating, but it is kind of fun. So I want to spend the time. Okay, page 260. If you don't have the Or Tzvi Chumash, I would recommend you take it, just because really the way that we're going to do this is using the Or Tzvi chart, because the Or Tzvi chart makes it a little easier to understand this. Okay, the if you look on the bottom of page 261, you'll see a chart which Or Tzvi delineates as the 70 who descended to Egypt. Everybody with me? Mm-hmm. Okay, the 70 who descended to Egypt. So what it does is it follows the following the way that the Torah depicts these families. It tells us that the Leah family had 33. It tells us that the Zilpah family had 16. It tells us that the Bilhah family had 7. And the Rachel family had 14. Okay, now, if you actually look in the Leah chart, how many people are numbered? Not a trick question, folks. Dina is the last one. How many?
32.
So this is the Or Chaim's question. The Torah summarizes the Leah family and says that it's 33. But when you actually count the numbers, it's 32. Now, is Leah counted? I don't know. When Yaakov tells Yosef, bury me in Israel, he says, I buried Leah there. Now, there's no indication in the Torah that Leah dies in Egypt or that Yaakov took her up from Egypt. Mm-hmm. Okay, it seems more than likely that Leah was not included. So 33 does not include Leah. So the question is, who's 33? Now what's the Chazal answer? Everybody? Yocheved, right? That Yocheved was born by Nachomos. Okay, so Or Chaim does not like that answer. Does not like that answer at all. Okay? So that's important to note. Now, it's what's cute to realize is that Zilpah was Leah's maid, right? Zilpah, how many in Zilpah's family? 16. How many in Leah's family? The real number, not the Torah's number.
Real 32.
32. It's double 16. Okay, that's cool, right? Oh. Bilhah is how many? Bilhah is how many in her family?
7.
And Rachel, she was the maid for Rachel, right? How many in Rachel's family?
14.
Isn't that cool? Double. Yeah. Okay, it shows who's who. It shows who's who. Anyway, so now let's take a look at the Or Chaim. Now that we understand that there is a problem with the way the numbers are presented. Okay, the summary number of Leah's family is 33. Fact of the matter is that even when you include Dina, Dina is the only female numbered, you have 32. Okay, there's only one other female numbered. Okay, that is Serach in the Usher group. You see Serach, she's number 46. Mm-hmm. The wives are not counted. And obviously the wives of the sons of Yaakov are not counted. So, you know, I mean, those are the only two females that are actually counted. Now, it would seem from the text, because the Torah does tell us that there were other daughters, and it depends what the daughters are. The Torah does tell us that, let me just find the Pasuk. Look at Pasuk Zayin, page 258. Banav uvnei vanav ito, binosav uvnos banav v'chol zaro hevi ito mitzrayma. Binosav, his daughters. Now, it could mean daughters-in-law, could be, okay? Uvenos banav, you know, it could mean how many daughters are we talking about? There's only one, Serach, and nobody else is counted. So, it's strange. It would seem that they probably had more people than these mostly, like, what kind of family is this? Mostly male? Yeah. I mean, it's like the Yated. Yeah, I mean, you know what I mean? It's like Mishpacha magazine. I mean, it's, like, there are no women. Okay, so this is what he says. Pasuk Ches, Ve'ela Shemos, Yesh la Yerfesh Mispar Zeh Echad, Lama Hutzrach Lamar Yaakov Uvanov. So I'm in the middle of page 5. Why does it have to say Yaakov and his sons? Gam Ein La Mashmos Beher Bahardav Asanyan. I mean, we know, it just says the family. Beis Amro Kol Nevesh Banov Shloshim Shalosh, it says regarding the Leah side of the family, 33. But Pratan Einim Kiim Lama Beis, but the fact of the matter is that when you count them specifically, it's only 32. Zala Gishim Izzah, the Amru Shi Yocheved on the letters Ben Echomos. So the Shenolda Ben Echomos, the rabbis said in the Midrash that it was Yocheved, who was born as they entered Egypt. With Divrei Hemzal, Yukublumi PM, Bulon Pizul Asam, Kein Rai Lazem Yakasim. He says, it's very nice, but the fact of the matter is, no proof of that in the Pasuk. Gamehem Amru Kishchina Soizbarach, He Amishalemes Ain. He says, but Chazal also said that who's number 70? God. God, or the Shechina, even if you want to say, if you don't want to say, it's God, it's the divine presence. Okay? Ule divrei hanzal, ein kan yocheve minyan. She'im lo kein, shleimim heim, v'mispar ha'ayin. Because, so they say, what they're saying is that yocheve is not part of that, because, you know, you can't have both. It can't be yocheve and the Shechina. Okay? Ule divrei hanzal, yitzdoku b'yishuv pasuk, chavzayin, abba achrona, kol ha'nefesh abba shivim. How can you call it 33 when it's only really 32? Okay, so first conclusion that he has, look at the very end of that paragraph, the part which I underlined, is Shetzirah Hashem. So one answer is that the 70 is 69 people plus God. Okay, that is an easier answer. You know what the easier answer is?
Yaakov.
Okay, exactly. So take a look at the next paragraph. He says, the fact, what's the truth? The truth is that the Torah is giving us two counts. In one of them, you count Yaakov. And in the second count, you're only counting Yaakov's descendants. When you count Yaakov and his family, guess what? It's 69 plus 1, 70. Simple. And when you count only Yaakov's descendants, then it's 69. Right? Look, if you actually look at the way it's presented in the Torah, Yaakov is talked about in the section talking about Yaakov. These are the people who came to Egypt. Yaakov, Uvanov. Bechor, Yaakov, Reuven. Yaakov seems to be counted there. So once you start with Yaakov, Reuven. And then after it finishes that, look what it says on the top of page 260. Ubnei Gad. Does it say Bechor is, you know, Bechor is Yaakov Mizilpa? No, it doesn't mention Yaakov again. So Ubnei Gad. And then it says Ubnei Asher. And Ela Bnei Zilpa. Okay? So then it says, you know, Zilpa gave birth. Then it goes Bnei Rachel. And then, and it says Bnei Bilha. Okay? Notice how it doesn't say Bnei Leah, which is kind of interesting.
But in the pasuk at the end, it says Kol Nefesh Bonav Uvenosav Shloshim Vishalosh. At the end of the pasuk, Tezvav.
Right. So how do you want to translate that?
Yes.
Kol Nefesh, all the Nefeshes, which we're talking about, which includes Bonav Uvenosav.
It doesn't seem to include Yaakov, really.
Right, but then how do you... Right, so that's why some will say that the 33 equals Yocheved. Okay? However, I'm going to show you why he doesn't like it. Okay, actually, take a look on the top of the next page. Okay, we're just skipping around in the interest of time. Okay? Take a look at the top of the next page. So it's not... I mean, the first two lines are from the previous paragraph. But look at the... So basically, look at the first paragraph on the page, not after those first two lines. And you'll see... That one of the things which he says that all the 33 are not, perhaps are not born yet. That's one viewpoint. If you on the third line there, it says that all the 33 we're talking about, they might not be born.
Mm-hmm.
basically, if it's said that Leah had all of these, and obviously she's only having her own sons, but it means that they are descended. That's like we say when somebody gets an aliyah, v'chol yotzei chalatzeh, right, which means children, grandchildren, etc. So Leah's grandchildren. So the fact is that when they're coming down to Egypt, if Yocheved is not yet born, so she's not counted as those who are your day Mitzrayimah going down to Egypt, but Levi's wife was with child. So when she walks through, so whether she was born at that time, gave birth, you know, whether, I mean, I can't imagine, you know. Do we have a midwife here? Push, push. I mean, you know, in a wagon just as they're entering. I mean, come on. Anyway, so with Siruf Avihem, I'm sorry, they're only 32. But when you add their father with the sons and the daughters, you have 33. So look at the last line that's in bold. Kol Nefesh, Lebeis Yaakov. What's the definition of Beis Yaakov, the house of Jacob? Perush, Huvanov, Shebel Mitzrayim, Beis Shivim. That's one way. But now look at the next. Look at the very next paragraph. Okay, so you have to understand, I'm a little skeptical of this viewpoint that Yocheved is born at this time, simply because if you do the math, when Moshe is born, how old is Yocheved? It's 130 years old. Okay? And yet there's no... Not that it's impossible, but the Torah made such a big deal about Sarah's age giving birth at 90, and nothing about, you know, this little squeaker. How did that one get passed? I mean, seriously. So, but he doesn't want to reject that, because the Or HaChaim is very respectful to the words of Chazal. So he says, in order not to chas v'shalom contradict what the rabbi said, so he gives a little explanation. So, v'yesh otam adavar shalo techlal v'cheshbon, ki im nolda bein achomos, tzricha lamed yom kadesh tetzim v'chlal nefe, v'lo yisa ru'i limonos b'chnis asam. He says, he has no problem with Yocheved being born at that time. But he says, you can't count her as one of the 70. You can't. But she's not an Eifel, but she's not yet 30 days old. Because if you're saying she's born at that moment, then those who come down to Egypt equal 70, and of course they're including Yosef and Yosef's sons, and which is a whole different discussion, because there are those who say that Osnas Bas Potifera was the daughter of Dina, which she's not counted in Yosef's group, but she might be counted if she's a daughter of Dina, which is fascinating. We saw it last year. You didn't say anything when that Ksavah Kabbalah said it. Okay, you can't do that. You have to object last year. Anyway, so that was that's another thing to consider. But again, the point that I'm trying to bring out with the Or HaChaim here is that he's saying, I'm looking at the numbers and there's a problem. Don't tell me 33 when there's 32, unless there's another way to understand the 33. So the answer is either God or it's Yaakov. And how does he seem to prefer, by the way?
Yaakov.
Okay, which of course makes the most sense, right? The most sense, just naturally speaking. Okay, so that's that. All right. Okay, let's take a look at a couple more things, and then we'll just conclude
so how
by.
Did he actually count Manasseh and Ephraim?
No, he says today. Correct. No, but that the Torah addresses that. It says we include Yaakov and we include Yosef and sons. Because when Yaakov and his family come down, the family is complete, and that's how you include them. Yeah, I mean you are correct. They're there. They're already there. Doesn't the Torah doesn't have a problem counting them, even though they're already in Egypt. Okay, one of the things which is mentioned is the sons of Yehuda, Pasuk Yibes, Uvnei Yehuda Er Onan v'Shelov Feretz v'Zarah. So we know that Aaron Onan died, and in the art scroll chart, they're not given numbers. So, fascinating thing that he said here. Why are Aaron Onan mentioned? And he says that it's an important reminder to everybody. That why did Aaron Onan die? What does the Pasuk say about them?
Yeshua?
Oh, what does the Pasuk say about them? I just turned the page.
They didn't find
them. By Yamas Onan be'eretz Kanan. Vayubnei peretz chetzron mechabul. That how are Aaron Onan forever defined? As people who lived and died in the land of Canaan. So look what he says. B'derek pshat. So I'm right under the good base. B'derek pshat yikavena kasuba askaras erev on la'amed alayhem zchus. Kitam, he says, Aaron Onan ha'yilatzad shayu be'eretz Canaan. He says that there is a merit to Aaron Onan that they died in the land of Canaan. Al derech omro k'masei eretz v'tzrayim u'k'masei eretz k'nan. V'timtza she yitzav al Yisrael lebal yimudu mehem d'chsiv k'masei. I don't know why he calls this a schus. Maybe I'm misunderstanding what he's saying. But it seems like he's saying that when Aaron, the reason why Aaron Onan died was because they were doing k'masei eretz k'nan. Like the deeds of the people of Canaan. That's, I don't know. You have a thought? Think about it. I don't know. Anyway, when Yaakov is reunited with Yosef, so the pasuk says, that Yaakov says, Amusa apam, that now I can die. Acharei rosias panecha ki odecha chai. It's the top of page 262. Now that I've seen your face and that you're still alive. So Or HaChaim explains, Asher alkein lo yisa simchaso shel imam misafek zeh ad Va'yera ilav. He says that Yaakov's joy over the news of Yosef being alive was not complete until he actually saw him. Yikir bo'befanav, until he actually recognized his face. Because it's the recognizing of the face which really moves a person. And that's what we see with completely righteous people. V'chein rabim shekiru b'roshem apanim, where they have the impact of the face. Masse Adam, the deeds of a person, that they can see like in somebody's face how the person behaves and what the person's personality is. And certainly Yaakov, when he saw Yosef, that he would understand who Yosef is. And what did Yaakov see? When Yaakov saw Yosef, he says, now I can die. You know why? Yaakov couldn't die when he heard about Yosef, because he needed to know how and who Yosef was after all these years. Yosef has been in Egypt for 22 years. Is he just Tzafnas Paneach, some Egyptian guy? Has he totally assimilated? Or is he still Yosef? So what does he say? Etam acharei rosi ponecha. Remember, who's Yaakov? It's Yaakov Avinu. He's a big tzaddik. Big tzaddik. He says, now I see your face. V'ikarti b'hem, and I see in your face, she'odecha chai, that you are still alive. No, what do you mean that you're alive? That the flame of Yadus, you're a Jew, is still alive. Perish tzaddik k'mikodem, you are still righteous as you were before. V'lonishtana d'yuknecha mikamosha aya, and your visage, the way that I see you, hasn't changed at all. Ela'odecha chai, but you are still completely alive. Ki atzadikim kruim chayim, because the righteous are called alive, v'nachon. He says that's good pshat, and I think it is a good pshat. I want to finish with that, but I do want to point out one more thing. Okay, and I summarize what I think the Or HaChaim is telling us in the next paragraph, in the next chapter, that the italics below is how Yosef plays Jedi mind games. Okay, what do I mean? Remember, you don't remember a Jedi mind game when Alec Guinness is in the hoverboard, whatever it is, with C-3PO and R2-D2, and the Imperial Guards are looking for these two droids that have the CD that Princess Leia put in there, and they're saying, you know, we're looking for droids, and Alec Guinness goes, these aren't the droids you're looking for. These aren't the droids we're looking for. Move along, right? Jedi mind games, where you tell them exactly what they want to believe. You look through the way Yosef presents his brothers to Paro, and he says, they're going to live in Goshen. Paro goes, they're going to live in Goshen. It's the best land. You can be shepherds. It's unbelievable. And that is essentially what the Or HaChaim says, that Yosef, it was a game that Yosef was playing to convince Paro that this is exactly what Paro wanted. And when you read the Psukim with that image in mind, it's fascinating. Because the way that Yosef just plays the cards exactly right, puts all the people in place and all the players where they need to be. And he says, so to the point that Paro says, ah, your brothers are here. They're already in Goshen. Beautiful. Enjoy. It's unbelievable. And that is where I think the Or HaChaim is, influenced George Lucas. When George Lucas studied Parshas Vayigash and the Or HaChaim, he said, oh, this is a good trick. We'll throw that into my wonderful movie. And that is, I think, what's pretty clearly going on over here. Okay, hope you got a little bit something out of today. And wish everybody a good devach.